In her latest book, Happier at Home, Gretchen Rubin takes us through her second happiness project, which focuses on the elements that create the concept of home. Possessions, marriage, parenthood, and family are among the themes that she explores in this follow-up to her best-selling book, The Happiness Project. It's published by Crown Archetype, and I'm very pleased it has brought Gretchen Rubin back to our show today. Welcome back.
Well, I'm very happy to be here.
So can you explain the premise of your Happiness Project?
Well, I wanted to really dig deep into the idea of home and what were the elements of happiness that really converged in my home, because we have so many expectations for what we want our experience of our home to be. And I just wanted to make sure that I was as happy at home as I could be.
And this is the follow-up to the previous book, which didn't deal with home?
It did, only indirectly. I hadn't really focused on it. There I was dealing more with sort of the general principles and trying to grapple with the big ideas of happiness and lay out for myself the major concepts. And here I could go more narrowly and more deeply into the areas that were there.
Well, when you ask most people what do they want most out of life, and they say to be happy,
yeah.
But I'm not sure that any two people have the same idea what happy really means.
I think that's exactly right. There's no one right way to happiness. And it's funny, happiness is a very elusive concept to define. There's something like 15 academic definitions of happiness. And for everyone, a happiness project would be different because they really would focus on very different things. For example, I think for a lot of people, adventure and travel are really important elements to happiness and something that they think a lot about. For me, I'm a real homebody. Those aren't too important to me, so they don't play a big role in my happiness project.
So it's a matter of just making your home a place that you can feel comfortable in? I mean, I have friends who would say that happiness at home would have meant that their parents didn't fight so much.
Well, absolutely. And I think the atmosphere of your home is one of the most important aspects. And so I really focused on the relationships in my home, my marriage, my relationship with my children, with my family, because the home is the locus of our relationships is very key.
And was your family happy about the fact that so many details of their lives were written about in this book?
You know, my family, they are sort of the innocent bystanders of happiness. They definitely benefit from my happiness projects, but I don't drag them along with very many of my resolutions. And so they very indirectly benefit from it, and they don't have to hear me talk about it nearly as much as I'd like to sometimes.
Now, you've written biographies of JFK and Winston Churchill. So these happiness books are a real departure for you, aren't they?
Well, you know, it may seem that way from the outside, but to me, they're all very related because I'm interested in human nature. And I was drawn to Churchill and Kennedy because they were these outsized personalities, and you could really see the elements of human nature in gigantic, magnificent form. And so for me, the Happiness Project is really a way to think about human nature and myself as an example of human nature and also other people and what it is to make a happy life.
Have you found documenting your own life more difficult than documenting the lives of others?
Well, as a writer, it was an interesting challenge. I had never written in the first person before, and so it was, you know, every project that you do, you need to do something that pushes yourself forward. And so for me, that was very exciting.
Well, are you somebody who's constantly looking for new ways to become happy? Because this is pretty much your third career, as I see it. Before you began writing books, you were a lawyer, you clerked for Sandra Day O'Connor. Most people would have found that pretty exciting and just been happy to stay there.
Right. Well, it was a wonderful experience. But I realized while I was clerking for Justice O'Connor that I really wanted to be a writer. And I think I had been so afraid of that goal and so intimidated by it that even though I'd been preparing myself for it all my life, when I look back, I was in denial about it. And then at some point, it just got to the point where I said, I really have to try. And I would rather fail as a writer than succeed as a lawyer. I have to give it a shot.
Well, there are many lawyers who have become writers, but they usually write legal thrillers. Did you ever think that your audience would have a hard time with a lawyer turned writer offering advice on happiness, especially when you look at what people say they think about lawyers?
Yeah, well, I always worry that lawyer-turned-writer sounds so boring that people just don't even want to pick up the book and give it a shot. But I think a lot of people identify with this idea of starting off on one path and then realizing you know, several years and a lot of effort down the road that you really want to try something new. And that was a very significant turning point in my own, the happiness project of my entire life. And I think a lot of people identify with that.
So how did you go about creating a happier home? I'm assuming that you have to begin with yourself.
Yes. I mean, one of the sad truths about a happiness project is the only person you can change is yourself. And so my resolutions are all things that I could do myself without anyone else's cooperation. I started by looking at possessions, not because they're the most important thing, but because they kind of get in our way. They weigh us down. They make us feel just burdened. And then I looked at things like my body, because your physical experience is always going to influence your emotional experience. So what about my body? And then my neighborhood, because your home, of course, is situated in a place. And so how could I feel happier and more connected to my neighborhood? I had a chapter on interior design, but that wasn't the Shelter magazine kind of interior design, but more my inner attitudes, my inner state, because yourself is always there in your home. You always bring yourself there.
You tell people who you are by the way you dress, and you tell people who you are by the way you furnish your home and what pictures you put on the wall and what period furniture you choose and whether you buy really expensive stuff or more you choose to have more comfortable things.
Yes. I mean, our homes, our possessions, they project ourselves. They allow us to project ourselves into our environment, and they're important reminders of the people and places and activities that we love, and they help signal other people what we value and what we find interesting.
So did you set about to change everything? You have a family that also lives in this home.
Yes. Well, I changed not that much about my physical home. One of my most fun resolutions was to cultivate a shrine. So I wanted to create areas of super engagement in my home. So I would take things that I loved and try to arrange them more mindfully so that I got more fun out of them. Like I made a shrine to children's literature. So all my works of children's literature are gathered together. And it's just
You didn't put votive candles next to them.
No, not candles, not that kind of shrine. But I didn't have anything that I didn't own before. But by arranging it beautifully, I was able to get much more pleasure out of it and also to create this area that signaled that this was something really important to me.
Well, you could go crazy with that. You could have a whole section on Turkish literature.
Yes. I think a lot of people sort of unconsciously make shrines. Like it might be a shrine to Maine, or it might be a shrine to France, or to wine, or to jewelry, to music, to crafts. We like putting our things together and arranging them nicely so that other people can come and look and that we can find what we want and see it arranged beautifully.
Gretchen Rubin is the author of several books, including the #1 New York Times bestseller, The Happiness Project. She has followed that up with a new book called Happier at Home, Kiss More, Jump More, Abandon a Project, Read Samuel Johnson, and My Other Experiments in the Practice of Everyday Life. It's published by Crown Archetype. I don't know whether you wrote that subtitle. Often writers tell me, well, an editor forced that upon me.
I labored for so long over that subtitle. No, I wrote that myself.
You say a reporter once categorized your writings as self-help, and you disagreed. How would you describe or categorize this kind of writing?
I guess it's self-helpful. It's a memoir of myself, but I think one of the interesting things is I think that you'd think that you would learn most by reading philosophies that apply to all of human nature or big scientific studies that apply to, you know, large populations. But it seems like people learn the best from other people's stories, even if they're very idiosyncratic. And it seems to be that by telling the story of my happiness project and what I tried and what I learned, that seems to be what people are able to identify with and then inspires them to try things for themselves.
Although we are talking about a very specific kind of happiness project, if you grew up in another country, if you grew up in Soweto or the slums of Bangkok or bad neighborhoods, some really rough neighborhoods in the United States, your idea of happiness might be quite different than if you live in suburbia.
Well, one of the things that's really interesting about people is that most people all across the world, in all the circumstances that you describe themselves as pretty happy or very happy. Most people describe themselves as pretty happy. People are very adaptable. And whatever their circumstances are, they find a way to be pretty happy. So I think they might use very different vocabulary, and they might certainly have different priorities that they would do. But I think this idea of trying to figure out what's important to you and how you can make it part of your everyday life in manageable, realistic ways is something that a lot of people could try.
Even though you don't write self-help books, did you look at other people's self-help books?
I love self-help books, but then I was also reading, you know, An Inquiry into Human Nature and, you know, the great classics of so many of the greatest thinkers of mankind have studied happiness, so I had a treasure trove of resources to look at.
Well, most of the people who buy self-help books are women. Do you think that women are more into the whole idea of improving themselves?
Well, one of the things that's interesting
about... Are men as clueless as women tell me we are?
One of the interesting things about the self-help genre is I read is that we think that people who read that kind of literature tend to be very high-functioning, and they're looking to become more high-functioning. It's not the people who are really hanging on by their fingers and are 45 minutes late to every meeting. It's the people that really want to do better and to find a way to get more out of their everyday experience.
What are your thoughts about popular methods of organizing the home like feng shui?
Well, I am not a believer in feng shui. It's a very deep philosophical approach, which has, you know, religious beliefs behind it. I do not myself follow those religious beliefs, and I think that for someone who doesn't, it can be a little bit of a distraction to think about, well, I need to have purple here, or I need to have a mirror hanging over my toilet, you know, and I would use that energy in a different way. Other people, but many of the principles are very universal, and certainly some people find it to be very helpful.
Well, you're saying that it's enough for people to believe something makes them happy for them to be happy.
Did I say that?
No, I'm extrapolating from what you just said. As long as you believe that, it's going to make you happy.
Well, I'm not sure if a lot of the people who follow feng shui actually believe in the actual underpinning ideas of feng shui. But they are inspired by it to take action in their life. And anything that makes you act more mindfully and to think about your choices and to approach them in a way that's going to make them a better reflection of your interests and your values and your nature is going to make you happier. So it could be a way that a lot of people undertake that.
Your research draws from a diverse range of writers, Samuel Johnson among them. He's mentioned numerous times in your book as well as in the title. Why Samuel Johnson of all people?
I am just a Samuel Johnson fan. And when I read Johnson, I feel like I understand myself better. Like one of the things that he wrote was, abstinence is as easy to me as temperance would be difficult. And when I read that, I completely understood something about myself that I had never understood, which is I can give things up altogether. I can abstain, but I cannot be moderate. And it's easy for me to say, I'm never going to eat a French fry than to have French fries sometimes. And when I wrote about this on my blog, many people instantly identified as abstainers or moderators. And so in a single sentence, Johnson was able to capture something about human nature that once I recognized it, I was able to understand myself better. And by understanding myself better, I'm able to make choices that make me much happier. I'm just much better at saying all or nothing, and there's no in-between for someone like me.
And then you write about Saint Therese.
Yes, Saint Therese is my spiritual master, which is surprising because I'm not Catholic. But I read her memoir, Story of a Soul, and...
there are a number of Saint Theresa's.
Yes, this is...
This is not the one who gave
herself
Therese tuberculosis?
Yeah, Saint Therese of Lisieux. Yeah, she died of tuberculosis at the age of 24. She's a doctor of the church, so she's one of the super saints. But she wrote this book, Story of a Soul, and... I read it and I felt like I understood myself better and I could understand what I wanted to ask of myself much better. She's very funny too, which is a very good thing and a spiritual master.
So have you followed your own advice? Do you feel that your happiness level has increased at home? And has your family's happiness level been raised as well as a result?
Absolutely. I mean, I have to say, when I started my first happiness project, I wasn't sure whether it would work at all. And in the spirit of scientific inquiry, I was prepared to discover that it didn't really make any difference. But I really am continually surprised how the things that I change when I do make those slight, not very difficult changes to my ordinary routine, I really am able to make myself happier. And when I change, the atmosphere of my household changes. And so the people who are there are happier too, even though I haven't asked them to do anything different.
What does this achievement of perfect bliss mean for you as a writer?
Well, I wouldn't
where
say
do you
I,
go
I,
from
I wouldn't,
here?
I wouldn't say I have perfect bliss.
Just teasing.
And I wouldn't even want perfect bliss. I don't think that would be a good existence. But as a writer, I feel so fortunate to have a subject that is so limitless.
So you're going to continue writing along this vein?
I think I'm going to. It's related. It's such a gigantic subject. There's a lot there to talk about.
Because I was hoping for a legal thriller.
I don't think a legal thriller
Court.
Is in my future. No, my sister, maybe she'll write a legal thriller.
You're not going to tell us what really goes on at the Supreme Court?
No. It's not as exciting as the movies would have you believe.
Gretchen Rubin will be reading and signing books tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at the Barnes & Noble store on East 86th Street. The book is called Happier at Home, Kiss More. Well, I like that. Jump More?
A quick fix for happiness. Just jump up and down a few times. Really works.
Abandon a project. I'm good at that. Read Samuel Johnson and My Other Experiments in the Practice of Everyday Life. It is published by Crown Archetype. Well, you've already done yourself and your home. What's next?
A book about habits.
About habits.
Yes.
And how habits can make us happy if they're good habits. And,
yes.
And if they're not such good habits, well,
that's
we know
right.
what happens.
That's
with them.
Right. That's right.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.